dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney. I'm guiding you about the battle space of the War of Ideas here with several very impressive, very important figures in that battle space. We'll be joined most immediately by Congressman Kiko Canseco, who represents the people of the state of Texas in the United States House of Representatives, a man who is a leader on many of the issues that are troubling our border community in particular, and we'll be catching up with him about Janet Napolitano and the president's insistence that everything's really just spiffy down there. Then we'll be talking with Bill Gertz about, among other things, the impact of budget cuts that are coming for the Defense Department and their magnitude and consequences. You're not going to want to miss his assessment of that. We'll be visiting with Jeremy Rabkin about the war powers controversy in the Congress, in particular about Libya, but where we go from here. And then finally, Senator Mark Kirk joins us from the great state of Illinois. We'll be talking with him about the president's determination to seemingly gut our missile defense capabilities at the moment that they're becoming all the more necessary. But first, we have Congressman Francisco Canseco representing the 23rd District of Texas. He is a member of the Financial Services Committee, but a man who is following very, very assiduously, I know, homeland security issues as well, particularly those emanating from threats across the border. And Congressman Canseco, thank you so much for joining us once again. It's great to have you back.
Well, thank you, Frank. It's always a pleasure to be at your show. And I represent almost 800 miles of Texas-Mexico border. And along that border, many of the citizens are very, very concerned about their safety and their security because of cross-border violence that occurs on American turf.
Now, this is a matter, it would seem, of almost parallel universes, Congressman. We keep hearing from the president and from his Homeland Security Secretary, Janet Napolitano, that the borders are more secure than they've ever been, that this problem is really being well managed, and it's kind of a figment of people's imagination to hear the sort of thing that you've just said. And yet we clearly are hearing from people on the borders, including in your constituency, that's just not so. How do you square these two very different realities?
Well, parallel universe is really, really being very kind to
well, I was trying to be charitable, sir.
Janet Napolitano and the president. I think that what I did was that I set out there a bill that is really a bill for everyone. And this bill, what it seeks to do is present a measure of what is border violence and what isn't border violence. When I was a guest at the Homeland Security hearing about a month and a half ago, I heard people from Homeland Security and from the Justice Department say that they had no way of measuring cross-border violence, that the FBI has no way of measuring cross-border violence. So I presented a bill that is going to be able to measure what is and is not cross-border violence. So what has not been measured before, whether it's drug cartel on drug cartel or bullets flying over the border or setas or cartel members firing at American sheriffs or American police on the American side of the border, those things are not gauged as being cross-border violence. So this bill will be able to measure everything that has been going on the border and be able to classify it and gauge whether or not we really do have border violence or not.
Yeah, and your firsthand experience and that of your constituents is that this is indeed happening. That kind of thing that you're going to be monitoring, should this legislation become law, would in fact demonstrate that we have such incidents occurring and on an increasing basis. Is that right?
Absolutely. And you know, we have 2,000 miles of Texas-Mexico border, excuse me, United States-Mexico border. And Mexico has some very serious drug cartel problems with an enormous amount of horrific violence. And I underline and highlight horrific violence. It has to bleed over. It does bleed over because they're using the American side as a safe haven or a safe harbor for their families and as a response for them, so that they can go back and join the fight. And in the course of which they send some trash our way. And that's not right. There is a high expectation of every American citizen that they be safe in their homes and in their communities from such violence. And this is the United States of America all the way up to that border line. And we've got to make sure that all of our citizens and all of our residents on the American side are safe from that kind of violence. And you know something, Frank, I've been to Mexico. I have seen what's going on over there. You've got businesses and ranches that have been taken over by drug cartels. And right there on the border, you can almost see them with binoculars just standing on a promontory looking over into the Mexican side.
It is extraordinary, sir, that you're even having to have this bill, this initiative, and that the administration in the person of Janet Napolitano and the president are so insistent that this reality is otherwise. We'll look forward to further conversation with you about that. Let me turn to another topic which bears on all of this, of course, and that is a scandal that is being investigated, I know, not by your committees, but by others in the Congress. I'd like your thoughts on the so-called Fast and Furious operation and what it means for the sort of insecure border that you're talking about.
Well, it turns out that ATF was complicit in selling arms to Mexican drug cartels. That's the bottom line. It was an attempt, a very poorly conceived attempt, by those agencies to try and follow arms sold into Mexico. If you are to believe that arms are coming in from the United States into Mexico, then this would have been the scheme in order to prove it. But it turned out to be nothing more than an arms dump into Mexico and further armed a lot of the drug cartels with automatic weapons and weapons that ultimately came around and killed one of our own, Mr. Zapata, that was killed on the way back into the United States, unarmed.
Yeah, this was a Border Patrol officer, as I recall, who was in Mexico trying to work this particular problem.
Right.
He was evidently killed, we're told, allegedly at least, by a fellow who's just been policed up and brought hopefully to justice here, Jesus Enrique Rejon Aguiar,
right,
the third in command of this organization that you talked about, the Los Zetas. This is a team of counter-narcotics paramilitary forces in the Mexican army that went bad. What is your sense, Congressman Kiko Canseco, of the actual state of play vis-a-vis this very dangerous gang and the threat that it poses to border communities like yours?
Zetas are not the only gang. Zetas have a lot of splinter groups that are fighting with each other along the border. It's heightening the violence along the border. You've got the Zetas, you've got the Sinaloa cartel, you've got the Gulf cartel, and several other splinter groups that are all fighting for the inroads into the United States to sell their wares and to sell their violence. Mexico is making an effort to try and contain that and to try and do it. They need our help. They're trying hard. They're not succeeding. They've got problems infrastructurally in their government. We are giving them a hand, but they need a lot more help. They need a lot more help. And, you know, we're in this boat that we call Earth together, and we share that 2,000-mile border with Mexico. And if Mexico fails, then we're going to suffer mightily for it. We're suffering right now because of what's happening right now along the border and with the drug cartels and the battle with the drug cartels. But we need to be a little more active in making sure that Mexico starts getting straight, simply because it's to our best interest as Americans that we maintain our borders safe and that our neighbors fly right.
Yeah, and as you have said, Representative Kiko Canseco, if Mexico goes down, all of this gets much, much worse. We didn't even get to the question of another group that is operating south of the border. This is a hearing in the Homeland Security Committee yesterday documented Hezbollah, but that's a subject for another day. Congressman, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for the work you're doing on Capitol Hill, and I hope you'll continue to come back to us and report so that we are sure that we're doing what we can to work this problem as well.
Always, Frank. Thank you for having me on your show.
Next up, we've got Bill Gertz to talk about the gutting of our missile defenses and the impact on our troops and on you.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined by Bill Gertz, our regular guest on the Inside the Ring beat. That is the title of his widely and properly renowned column at the Washington Times, where he serves as the national security editor. And Bill, you broke some news, as you often do, this week concerning a new missile defense concession. Tell us what the administration is up to now and what the implications of it might be.
Sure. Basically, the Obama administration is about to make another concession to Russia on missile defense by concluding an agreement with Turkey to base a radar in that country that would monitor Iranian missile launches. The problem here is that the Turkish government is moving in an Islamist direction and a pro-Iranian direction, and they have said publicly that any radar there for a NATO-European missile defense, they would not allow the data to be shared with Israel, which, of course, is a major target for any kind of an Iranian missile attack, and a close U.S. ally. So there are a number of problems there. And this deal is about to be signed within the next week. And the other problem is that this radar that they're going to put there, it's called a TPY-2 radar, is less capable than the plans that were underway for the Bush administration to place a similar radar in either the former Soviet Republic of Georgia or Azerbaijan.
What's going on here, Bill? Why is it that the administration seems so intent on dumbing down or otherwise restricting America's missile defense capabilities at a time when, as you know better than just about anybody, the threats that we must be worried about, both to our allies and to ourselves, just continue to grow, not just from Iran but elsewhere?
Two things. One is this basically appeasement of Russia. The Obama administration seems to be intent on aligning itself with basically a rogue regime in Russia, a regime that is not moving in a democratic direction. And they've done everything possible on a number of different fronts, not just missile defense. The second thing is that there's a vitriolic hatred of missile defense within the top ranks of the Obama administration. The person that comes to mind is Ellen Tauscher, the Undersecretary for International Security and Arms Control. She basically dislikes arms missile defense and sees it as an impediment to doing other bigger strategic arms treaties with the Russians and others.
Well, we will be speaking shortly with Senator Mark Kirk about this. I know he's one of the senators who's written expressing serious concerns about it, and properly so. And, Bill, thanks for bringing this to all of our attention as well. Let me ask you, the administration, as you know, has also not just gone after missile defense, but is now very aggressively working to, well, in the words of its own former Secretary of Defense, Bob Gates, hollow out the military with deep cuts of, some have set the bar as low as $400 billion. That was the president's sort of opening bid. There are reports now, Bill, in the press that it might be as high as $700 billion in cuts in defense spending over the next 12 years. Give us your sense from your perspective at the Washington Times and inside the ring, as you often are in the Pentagon, as to how on earth the Pentagon will effect those kinds of cuts without really eviscerating the kinds of national security capabilities that the country requires, especially in a world becoming ever more dangerous.
Well, let me first say that in my view, the further to the left of the political spectrum a president or his administration is, the more anti-military are the policies, and that's the case with the Obama administration. I think it's clearly the most left-wing administration since the Carter administration, and they've targeted defense. They want to use that money for pet domestic projects, and this is coming at the worst possible time, this idea of cutting $400 to $700 billion in defense, because the bills are coming due for a U.S. military that's been run ragged in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're in dire need of resetting their forces, getting new equipment, and upgrading it. In other words, in order to maintain its edge, its technology edge, its weapons edge, its global reach, the military needs to do spend more money. And here we have an administration that's trying to cut more spending from defense. So this is really a dangerous situation, and it really risks this idea of hollowing out the military, being unable to conduct the kind of global operations that the United States needs to do.
Yeah, and that's really the point. At this kind of level of cuts, $400 billion, let alone almost twice that, it seems to me you're going to see not only the resetting of the force over the side, modernization more generally over the side, but even, you know, the maintenance of the force, the operations and maintenance, as they call it, O&M, the readiness related funding, the training funding, the size of the forces themselves would assuredly have to be cut, as well as pay and benefits and pensions and so on. I mean, it really will be a wholesale assault on the Pentagon and in turn on the, as you say, the capabilities that the country requires to secure it. I wonder from your time over in the Pentagon, Bill, whether you're seeing this perception now translating into a real impact on morale of the folks that they're going to bear the brunt of all of this.
Yes, clearly there's a lot of unhappiness at the upper levels of the military. Therefore, the Obama administration is engaged in a wholesale change at the top. Just this week, the Deputy Secretary of Defense Bill Lynn announced that he's leaving. He was probably because he was passed over for the top job. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs is leaving. So we're going to have some new people in place, and they are going to be the ones that are going to have to hold the line. There is a morale problem. People are saying that there's a sense of the military going into free fall under the Obama administration. And this is not by accident. This is an ideological assault on the military by left-wing liberals in the upper ranks of the Obama administration.
Yeah, I think that is the unmistakable conclusion. I mentioned it earlier in my remarks at the top of the show that this is not, you know, incompetence or inadvertence. This is by design. And unfortunately, there's very little evidence that the Republicans are going to stand up to it in the way that one would think they would, based on their press appreciation of the importance of peace through strength, let alone the necessity of doing so for the good of the country. Bill, let me ask you about two other things quickly. One is there was a court ruling this week about gays in the military that makes it sound as though ready or not, here they come. The Pentagon's need to prepare for this is no longer a consideration, according to the courts, the appellate court. We're going to just see them having to take avowed homosexuals aboard, whether they have made the proper efforts to minimize the impact of that. And secondly, if you had anything you could say about John Brennan's new counterterrorism strategy, all of this in about 2 minutes, that would be great.
Sure. On the first issue, it's another example of activist courts seeking to legislate from the bench. The Pentagon has its plan. They've announced they're going to repeal the ban on don't ask, don't tell, but they want to do it in a way that is not going to damage the forces. And here you have obviously some liberal judge taking an activist position and trying to nullify the law before the Pentagon should do that. If the Obama administration had any guts at all, they would take this case to the Supreme Court and say, look, we need to do this in an orderly way. It's not clear that they're going to do that. On John Brennan, basically, the shift in strategy is going towards smaller scale operations. In other words, it's this idea that they do not want to use large scale conventional military forces in the war on terrorism. They want to use more intelligence-oriented operations, more special forces-oriented activities designed to go specifically after Al-Qaeda, and less so on the ideological front. I think it's a bad idea. I think that what's needed is a much more comprehensive ideological approach to Islamist extremism. It's something that this administration is loath to do, but is ultimately what's going to win this battle against radical Islam.
I couldn't agree with you more. Bill Gertz, as always, thank you for a wonderful overview of what is afoot and what we should be worrying about inside the ring and beyond. Come back to us again next week. We'll talk to you then.
Thank you.
Next up, we've got Jeremy Rapkin on war powers and other forms of lawfare. Straight ahead.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it. At www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira. And like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by Jeremy Rapkin, Dr. Jeremy Rapkin, a professor, a distinguished professor, in my way of thinking, which is not something I often associate with professors, of the George Mason School of Law. He is the author, among other works, of Law Without Nations. He is a champion of American sovereignty, who appreciates American exceptionalism and worries, as do we here at Secure Freedom Radio, about threats to both that are emerging, some of them quite obviously and some of them less so. And so we call upon him from time to time to help clarify these issues. And Jeremy, welcome back. It's great to have you with us as always.
Always good to be with you. Thanks.
Let's start with Libya. Much thrashing is going on at the moment in the United States Congress and at the White House and elsewhere in this town about what is afoot there, both the character of the war we're fighting and where it's likely to leave us, but also specifically the question of whether the president has been authorized properly to conduct these hostilities. What say you on the subject?
Well, he hasn't even been authorized improperly. I mean, there was no authorization. He didn't ask for it, and he didn't get it. And the House of Representatives voted down a bill that would have authorized it. So he's in trouble if you need congressional authorization. And I think it's reasonable for people to say, as the White House has said, that the president has some inherent authority to use force in an emergency. There are situations, and you can trace this back to the era of the founders, in which, you know, we have a ship that's attacked at sea and we have to respond immediately. It's not a war. We don't need a declaration of war. The president, as commander-in-chief, has some authority to deal with an emergency. I think it's even reasonable to say, as the White House has said, that in the modern world, sometimes we need to launch a cruise missile strike or some kind of bombing attack. And that doesn't require always a declaration of war. We don't even, in many situations, mean to be at war. We just want to target someone who's really dangerous, and maybe the president can just do that. But this has already gone on for 3 months, and NATO, just in the last 2 weeks, agreed that they would let it go for another 90 days, another 3 months. When you have continuous involvement in an ongoing bombing campaign for 6 months, you cannot just call that an incident. And I think it's very disturbing that the president is saying, well, as long as I don't have ground troops, then it's not really a war and I can do whatever I want. Among other things, what that does is it gets us into a military engagement with red lines announced in advance to the people we're fighting. We've now told Colonel Gaddafi, you don't have to worry about ground troops because the president can't get Congress to authorize that, or he doesn't want to ask Congress to authorize that. Well, this is not a way to fight a war, and something that goes on for 6 months with a lot of people being killed, it's childish to say it's not a war.
Yeah. This kind of, depends on what the definition of is kind of approach to something, as you say, that can be a matter of life and death.
I want to make one other point, which is we've had a lot of examples. I mean, it's in the newspapers at least once a week. We do a strike on some suspected terrorist camp or figure in Somalia or in Yemen or someplace. I think an important distinction there is not just that it's over in one day, but that what we're saying is we tried to catch someone, and if we missed, oh well. When you've had a campaign like this that's gone on for months, you can't just shrug your shoulders and say, oh, well, so we've decided to give up and it doesn't matter. That is really announcing to the world that the United States is not serious. I mean, if we leave Gaddafi in power at this point, that'll be a dangerous thing, not just to the Libyans. It'll be tragic for the Libyans, but it'll be a dangerous thing for us because it's announcing to the world that we make commitments in a lighthearted way and don't feel bound by them.
Right. It happens, Jeremy, that we are likely to have come to power in his stead when and if he falls. The Muslim Brotherhood or perhaps Al-Qaeda, which may mean that what we get is something even worse. It's an unhappy state of affairs, but I guess what the question we're exploring with you, Jeremy Rapkin, is the process by which we're engaged in making this war, let's call it what it is, appropriate under our Constitution? And if it's not, what should be done to bring it into conformity? And as you say, the House of Representatives has rejected the president's authorization of this this effort. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee has given its approval. The Senate may or may not go along with that. We'll see. But what would you do at this point, and do you see a way ahead here in Libya that is likely to conduce to American interests?
Well, let me start at the end. Is there an outcome that could be favorable for us? Yes, sure, there could be, and I'm not even saying it's extremely unlikely. It's quite possible that, I think it's more likely than not, that in sometime in the next few months, Gaddafi will either be killed or will flee. And good luck to him wherever he can find refuge, the Congo or wherever he goes. And it's possible that things will settle down and we'll be happier with the new government than we were with the Gaddafi regime. All that is possible. You'd like to think that we're doing more than hoping for a good result, but we have really limited, I think, our leverage quite a lot. It's a small country. It's a small country with a lot of chaos. The idea that there shouldn't be any foreign troops there after Gaddafi is killed or leaves, it's just crazy. I don't understand that. However, the UN did stipulate in the original resolution authorizing this that there could not be any foreign military occupation. And a lot of people will say that means NATO cannot send in troops. And so now you have this question. Are we bound by that? Is this whole thing being run to satisfy the Security Council, or who exactly? And that goes back to, if you don't have congressional authorization, you have a lot of confusion about what it is about.
Yes.
The president just seems to improvise, you know, from week to week, what he thinks his goals are there.
Well, and even as he says with a straight face that there's been no mission creep, it seems evident that we are now very much in the business of regime change there. One other point that I wanted to get into very briefly now, Jeremy, is you are a serious student and I think quite properly a critic of the International Criminal Court. The British Minister of Defense has indicated that the conditions that under which we are limiting our operations in Libya are essentially in deference to parameters established by not only the UN and Security Council and so on, as you say, but also the International Criminal Court. Give us a quick take on that.
Yeah, so just to be clear, he didn't just indicate. The Honorable Liam Fox sat before a parliamentary inquiry, and he assured them several times everything that we're doing in Libya is consistent with limits on the use of force that are set down in the statute of the International Criminal Court. And he said, you don't have to worry that any British pilots or officials will be indicted because we are acting consistent with these international standards enforced by the International Criminal Court. If you just think about that for a minute, what it's saying is, this Argentine lawyer in the Netherlands is determining the limits on NATO strategy. I think there's something just absolutely insane about that.
Yeah, at least self-defeating, that's for sure. We're at a point where these kinds of restrictions, as you said earlier, I think, are signaling to our enemies the limitations within which we will operate.
It's signaling to our enemies, and if you just step back for a minute and ask yourself, well, wait, what's really at stake here? I mean, we don't want to have, of course we don't want to have a wanton slaughter of civilians, but if our inhibitions in pursuing airstrikes prolong the conflict, there are going to be more people dying. Who determines when it is worth risking more civilian casualties to bring the thing to a speedier end? It's madness to say it should be a lawyer in The Hague who has no military experience and no responsibility for conducting operations.
Right, and may have considerable hostility to those who would be using such force as well.
Well, I think it is his job to show that this applies even-handedly, and we're not just indicting tyrants in Africa, we're also keeping an eye on NATO forces.
Right.
Really?
It is my job. It is my job to say thank you, Jeremy Rapkin, as we're at the end of our time.
Very good.
Thanks
for
this very important clarification of what's going on here vis-a-vis Libya and what the stakes are for us as well. We'll look forward to visiting with you again soon.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy. Eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, I am very pleased to say, to be joined by an old friend and colleague of many years, now a distinguished United States Senator from Illinois. His name is Senator Mark Kirk. He has served in uniform in the United States Navy. He has been a member of the House of Representatives. He has worked on its staff before that. He has also now become a very influential member of the United States Senate, bringing to bear his expertise on national security matters. And it's always a pleasure to have you with us, Senator. Thank you for joining us, and thanks for what you're doing up there on Capitol Hill to try to make sure that we're not completely losing sight of the national security challenges of our day. And in that regard, I just wanted to start with something we were talking about earlier in the program with Bill Gertz, and that is some of the work you've been doing on missile defense in the face of what seems to be a concerted effort by the Obama administration to weaken or otherwise inhibit our ability to defend ourselves and our allies, including Israel, against the threats that are real and growing, as you know so well.
In fact, we all remember last year when, on the eve of the anniversary of the Russian invasion of Poland, President Obama pulled the plug on a missile defense plan for NATO to be based in Poland and the Czech Republic. They've now followed up this year with a proposal to bring the Russians into the U.S. Missile defense system of the United States, giving them a common operational picture of data of what we see and when we see operations, and including a joint doctrine for how we would operate together. This is in the face of publicly published classified information, which is now out and reported to the Congress, that the Russian Federation has been actively involved in supporting the missile and nuclear programs of the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is the chief driver of the need for the missile defense program for the United States. It doesn't make any sense, and that's why Congress needs to stop it.
One other aspect of this, which presumably is just going to further, I hope, outrage yourself and your colleagues, is this idea that we're going to base some of the sensors associated with the European part of our missile defenses in Turkey, at a time when Turkey is becoming more and more unreliable and evidently is insisting that we not share any of the data that might come out of those radars with our friends in Israel. What are your thoughts on that, and what can be done, as you say, to have Congress object?
Well, the administration has also, while canceling an advanced radar that was to go into the Czech Republic, a very strong NATO ally, they want to instead put a radar in Turkey. Now, I served in Turkey with the U.S. Navy, and the record of the Turks is very unstable. For example, during Operation Northern Watch, where we protected 5 million Kurds from Saddam Hussein, the Turks oftentimes would say yes and no and turn on and off operations, being very unsteady in their support for what we were doing as part of the U.N. and NATO mission. My concern is that will happen also with this missile defense warning radar. And, of course, if the Turks are allowed to turn it off at any time, then it will very likely not be on when we need it most. They've also put out the insistence that any information collected not be shared with our allies in Israel. And democracies are best when they work together. And for one NATO ally to be saying that to the United States shows the unsteadiness of the Turkish politics. And how I think a radar probably would be much better based in a country like Georgia, who has been a much more steady friend of the United States than Turkey.
Yeah. Well, this raises the larger question, Senator, and I'm happy to be reminded of your service in Turkey. You've watched, obviously, Turkey move through the Erdogan era from a very robust, very important anchor for NATO into a much more dubious status, at the very best a fair-weather friend. What is your thought more generally, not just in connection with the missile defense piece of this? And I note that you have, as Bill Gertz writes about in his Inside the Ring column, joined Senator Kyle, your colleague Senator Jim Rich of Idaho and Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, in raising real concerns about this with the administration. But what are your thoughts more generally about what we do with a so-called NATO ally who is seemingly much more interested in being allied with Iran?
That's right. Turkey is becoming closer and closer to Iran. It's becoming a very unsteady NATO partner. Turkey used to be one of the strongest NATO allies. She sent her armed forces to fight with us, for example, in Korea during the 1980s under President Reagan and Prime Minister Özal. Turkey was one of the steadiest partners against the Soviet Union. But under Prime Minister Erdogan, he has now moved more and more into the Iranian orbit with a lot of diplomatic cooperation. And I'm very worried that facing any critical U.S. assets in that country simply makes us more vulnerable to Iranian influence, and these assets may not be valuable at all to the United States because of the unsteady Turkish hand.
Yeah, no, this is very worrying indeed, and I'm glad you're on the case, Senator Mark Kirk, in the United States Senate, representing the people of Illinois. Let me turn to two other issues quickly, if we may, Senator. One, your thoughts on what the president has done by bringing a Somali terrorist who had been interrogated for 2 months, apparently on a ship out in the Mideast, back to New York City and put him into the federal judiciary and the civilian courts there. This is now a matter of some controversy within the Senate. Where do you come down on the issue?
I thought we all remember when the president proposed bringing the 9/11 mastermind, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, to New York for a criminal trial. New York Police Department estimated that that the security around that would cost at least $75 million. And the need to protect judge, jury, prosecutors might extend for their entire lives with no real plan to do that. The president wisely finally backed off on that plan to bring Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to New York, but has now reversed himself again, and he's decided to bring a man named Ahmed Abdul Qadir Warsame, one of the critical operatives in two key al-Qaeda cells, one called al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula that operates in Yemen, the other called al-Shabaab that runs in Somalia. This man was nailed by U.S. forces. And instead of treating him as an enemy combatant, we're treating him as a federal criminal defendant with full constitutional rights. Now, under U.S. law established by President Lincoln and President Roosevelt, the man who wore no uniform and fights for no country is not entitled to U.S. constitutional protections or, in fact, the protections of a prisoner of war. They are an enemy combatant and can be subject and should be subject to trial by military commission. But instead, the president has waived all those precedents, and this critical al-Qaeda operative will now come to New York, and two things will happen. First, we're going to need tremendous security to protect the judge, prosecutor, and especially the jury and their families for most of the rest of their lives. And secondly, under the U.S. Constitution, he'll be allowed to confront his accuser and review all evidence, and I am very worried that key U.S. intelligence evidence will now be revealed in public court and be splashed all over the jihadist world, when it would have been much better to hold this tribunal before a military commission so that the U.S. intelligence information could be protected and used to protect Americans in the future.
And, Senator, why was that not done in this case, do you think?
I think because the president still actually agrees with his original decision on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And there's a basic fundamental problem here. The president apparently believes that the war on terror is a law enforcement problem that could be handled in U.S. criminal courts, and giving al-Qaeda terrorists who committed no crime in the United States and wore no uniform and fought for no country full U.S. constitutional rights. This is one of the critical mistakes outlined by the 9/11 Commission that in their view and in my view, the war on terror is to be solved by U.S. intelligence and military assets,
yep,
and not the civilian criminal court.
Senator, I have to interrupt you just to say goodbye. We are very, very concerned about the same problem as you are. Thank you for joining us. We didn't get to Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood. I hope we might visit with you again about those very near future, as they're very important aspects of this same mindset, same problem. But thank you very much for your service, sir. Thank you for joining us, and come back to us again soon. I hope that you, too, will join us again next week. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank
Gaffney. From the nation's capital,
thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.